outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you back to the God Journey and our continuing 7-week series we're calling Redeeming Love. How Sarah and I found our way through her trauma to a renewed relationship beyond it. I want to thank so many of you for your expressions of love and concern for us. Just so you know, these were all recorded a few weeks ago, and the journey to health and ever-deepening love continues to fill our hearts with great joy. We're also grateful for Kyle's friendship and wisdom through the story and the retelling of it. In this episode, Sarah and I are finding our way back to each other. This one begins with one of the most difficult elements of the story for me, how God helped Sarah move out and set up a new life on her own.
Because even in the midst of all the stuff for months, and this is where I don't understand, I just know that there were times that Father found things for me. He directed me. I mean, he was there and helping me, and part of me felt like this is something that he was helping me in process and doing and going and leaving. And I, like, yeah. I said, that's still all being, maybe I don't even have to go back and visit it now after everything, but the realization of what I've done is still shocking to me. Even though I live in a space and I can be in an apartment and know and have that be there, know what it took to be there, but it still is shocking that,
yeah.
Wow, you did this. Why? I mean.
Well, and I remember talking to you in kind of the thick of it and you saying, I feel like God's asking me to do this, but it does not make sense. Like, how could he ask me to take some of these steps?
I still don't know how to answer that. It doesn't make sense. How are, in my belief of what marriage and, you know, for better or for worse, and that's, and I, that was part of the battle inside of me. It's for better or for worse. I know I love him, but how or why would I do this? Maybe those are questions or answers that I, conversations, and in heaven, but probably it wouldn't matter at that point. I won't probably care.
I think, though, in the midst of this, one of the things that I've really seen happening for you, Sarah, is just an unpacking and just a completely new discovery of who Father is for you. And even that term, even that name, even that relationship, just that's been really being redefined. Am I right in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, before I knew he was there. I knew I loved him. I knew he loved me, but accepting and living in that and believing in that love, or I guess maybe it's like resting in that. It's because I was just in that a lot of that time. It's just, God, it's only in you and you. I just need you. I just need you. That's how I get through this, is just you. You're the one, the source for the healing. And I didn't even know at that point in time what all that healing was going to entail.
Yeah.
But I just, there is more a resting in him that I've never understood, lived, or been able to be at, and I'm still learning that, but I'm believing that's for me.
If you were going to give a 2-3 word summary of who you know Father is now, like in the midst of this, like you had some other things, like other ways that you know him, but who is he now to you? Who do you know him as now, as you've navigated this incredible season over the last 8 weeks?
My faithful, trusting, rock. And who, that's all I need. To just be there.
Now, fast forward, I'm in Los Angeles. Wayne has picked me up and he and I actually went out for dinner and just got to walk along the beach and just process and talk.
I would rather have gone with Sarah, just to be clear, but it was fun.
How so, Wayne?
I would rather be with Sarah than you, as much as I was grateful you were there.
Oh,
Sarah and I went back to that same restaurant about 3 weeks later for our anniversary and had some time.
Oh, yeah. She's a much better
date
than
I am. That's all I'm saying right there.
Wayne, when we were talking, we weren't even sure how much time Sarah, like we were prepping for a conversation with Sarah. Sarah asked for us to meet offsite. So not at your home, but actually at a restaurant. So kind of a neutral location near your guys' home. What was going through your mind as you were realizing, okay, I'm going to get to see my wife for the first time, not looking at her through a camera or a security camera, but I'm going to be sitting in a public restaurant across the table from my wife.
Yeah. I'm thinking horse whisper, man. As far as I knew, she only wanted to talk about how we negotiate being at kids' events together. And yeah. By that time, I'm in the mode of whatever Sarah wants. I'm not pushing it. I mean, there's 1,000 questions I'd love to ask her, but I'm really going to keep it in the space she wants it to be in, where she feels safe. And I'd known by then that tenderness was going to be the way this would work, and not by trying to take control of it or trying to push it at my speed. The speed of Sarah again. But she did, you know, she had to drop a dog off here before we met the restaurant. So she did say we could greet her here and a hug was appropriate. So man, it was so sweet just to have her in my arms again, even though I knew it may be the last time. I didn't know where this was going to go, because in her mind it was still, we are going to live separate lives. Let's just find a way to do that amiably, which I told her if that's all we could do, I would be her friend. Even if we weren't spouses again.
Sarah, what was going through your mind? What were some of the concerns, some of the potential thoughts that you had or anticipations that you had, expectations you had about that first encounter with Wayne in person?
Well, I knew he was going to probably be breaking down, and I was just nervous. It was comforting when you had set up some parameters, I guess, for the meeting and the time and prepping, and that you were going to come out and greet me first before him. And so that just created an environment where I helped feel more safe. I mean, when we embraced and it was just, I mean, it was comforting, but yet it was, I was nervous inside. I don't know if I was scared. I had no really other expectations or thoughts except, you know, just trying to figure out a way to maneuver this with the kids. I mean, really, literally, I was not. I mean, you wanted me some, asked me for any questions or something. You asked me. Well, what I wanted, I said I wasn't going to tell him that I love him, because I didn't want to complicate. I mean, how was he going to take that if I know I love him with what I just did? And that would pose a lot of questions. Yeah. And so I let you know that I'm not going to say that. And I don't remember what else I was or wasn't going to. And you were trying to, you know, trying to get us prepared for being together. And so, you know, for me during all this time, I'm just trying to function and get through a day. Yeah. It's not like I'm planning anything in the future or whatever, you know, I want to eventually buy a house or whatever. And that's all I wanted to do. Other than that, I mean, just, you know, brushing the teeth at night just was like, oh, I don't want to do that. So I just climb in bed. Right. Just as long as I made sure that, you know, the dogs were taken care of. That was all I basically did. And the bills were paid, hopefully. That I didn't forget something.
in the very detailed outlines. Wayne showed me the detailed outline that you had set up just for Abby, and I was like, all right, that is incredibly impressive, the level of detail and information.
I wanted him to be prepared for everything and have everything, you know, all set. And then, yeah, it was a 3-inch binder. Well, I don't know, 200 pages or something. I don't know how much was in there. I had print out of all her history of medical records so he could, you know, if there's any question, he would have it. It's not reasonable thinking, is it?
No, again, circling back to just as you're processing in the midst of crisis that is being filtered through trauma, through a trauma lens, it doesn't necessarily seem logical, right? It doesn't, it's like, why, that doesn't make sense. Why would I do that? And that, for me, that's, it's in those things. It's untangling, okay, what is Sarah in crisis? And what is Sarah's genuine heart that's shining through here? And so how do we delineate between the two of those? How do we give space for both of those to be present at the same time?
Yeah. Except I didn't know that, you know, the crisis mode at which Sarah was in. I know I was in a tough spot, but, you know, it was, my eyes were definitely sheltered at that point in time, I guess.
I think we've both been helped by that point of realizing that part of you can want one thing and part of you needs something else. And we tend to think of ourselves more integrated than our brains really are wired for. So when Sarah's thinking more from, say, the human brain, there's more rational thought, there's more whatever. When trauma pushes her down into the amygdala or the reptilian brain, then there's other feelings there. And they can both exist side by side. Just like my trusting God with these doves, that could be a thing. And then 5 minutes later, be lost in my agony and pain. And God keep telling me one thing we didn't talk about in an earlier session was just, it's not about you. That's one of the things Lewis had said about Jesus's in a dream, his interpretation of Jonah. Why did Jonah do what he did? He made it about himself. And that just came back to me. So I have on my board over here, it's not about you. And when I could be in the it's not about me space, I could hold her, love her, talk to her, even when she's not present. The times I'm in her garden or just talking to her, it was very different than when I would get all lost in the, man, I can't believe she did this to me and didn't even talk to me and didn't give me a warning, even though I'm begging her for months in advance, tell me what's going on with you. When I get in that space, it get very dark. And I think we both learned that you can hold two things or three or four things that your mind races around to at various times. So you're grabbing from here, you're grabbing from there, and it'd change how you see what you see.
Having an understanding of that and recognizing, actually seeing it in action, it's like, oh, that can exist, and I'm not crazy, right? I'm not out of control. I'm not this fractured person, but there's, how do I hold these things in tension as I'm working through this? Wayne, you'd already talked to Therese, right? Before we sat down for
the first, I just said that first sketch through the traumatic brain was. Yeah. And then we'd talked extensively about it.
So when you sat down for breakfast, and you know, there was just kind of this expectation that primarily Sarah wants to just talk about interacting with the grandkids and how do we coexist in shared public spaces when it comes to family. What was going through your mind as you sat down and are sitting down presently in person across from her?
I just wanted to be a safe place for her. So I was just, I'm going to go as far in this conversation as she wants to go, and I'm going to stay out of it. The only thing I did want to let her know, I'd had some stuff on the traumatic brain that had been exposed to me, and I think it might be helpful for her to consider it. So I kind of put it out there as a maybe. And then she picked up on it.
And what was it that you put out there that you felt like she really resonated with?
Oh my gosh, this is like 18 years ago. So I'm not
even. It does. It feels like it's ancient history.
It was just the main things about, you know, you could, it might not be personal, it might not be logical, that there's something really painful in there that's reacting. And maybe that explains some of what she was feeling towards me. Or
yeah.
And I also had all that bit about the evil therapist making me her Frankenstein. And so I generally kind of tease that a little bit, that maybe I'm not that guy in that letter. But it was all very gentle. I wasn't looking to have a reunion moment with Sarah here. I was grateful that she was, I was sitting at a table with her and we were talking. Yeah. And I, for the first time in 5 weeks since I've been gone too, this would be the first time in 5 weeks I've laid eyes on her and had her in my eyesight and seeing her eyes. And it was very emotional for me. I was so grateful that she took the risk to come out of her spidey hole and sit down with us. And yeah, and then I had to go take care of the dogs. We had an open house going on at our home. So then she and you had more of a chance to talk about the traumatic brain and just give her kind of a, this may be helpful to you, kind of a framework.
From there, we moved on and actually decided to have more interaction. Yeah. The two, as Sarah specifically, you said, hey, can we have some more conversation?
Well, she asked, I think what she did, we were walking to the car after, she said, would you like to spend more time together? And I said, yeah, what are you thinking? And she said, well, I'd come over tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I said, come. So yeah. She came over about 1 o'clock and she stayed till almost 7. It was after 6:30.
For me, I think what, with the, when he was trying to describe the traumatized brain and all that, and it was just like, whew, you know, right over my head, some of it. But it, what got was how I responded, some of the things, knowing, you know, through the years of when I go blank, when we're having tense conversations and because there's no blood going to that, or where I'm, you know, I'm overcompensating in that fawning term that they use, and where I freeze, yeah. If I startle, I freeze, or I have no words. And so it was just all those things that you were describing about a traumatized brain were things that it's just like, well, that's my life. It has been. And it was just like, well, I didn't know what that meant, but I mean, I just like,
yeah, for me, knowing that when the amygdala kicks in, which I see, I could look back over months and see that Sarah now was fully, when I understood what that was, that she was kind of really into that space. And then what she had done to me was really even clearer that that's the space she was in. Mm-hmm. And both the fawning and the fleeing. That was really clear to me. And when I could see that for her, it gave me a different way to hold space for her.
Yeah.
That we could do that. And one of the things they say is when your amygdala kicks on, we heard this the other day, again, that there's this region of the brain called the Broca's region or Broca's area or something, that it forms thoughts into words. And when the amygdala kicks in, it sucks all the blood away from that region of the brain. Because we had so many conversations where I'd say to Sarah, so what do you think here? And she goes, I can't say. And I'm thinking, you can't say because you don't want to say, like you don't try. And so I'd keep pressing. And she goes, I have nothing to say. I'm going, you just don't want to say it. And now when she says she has nothing to say, I just, okay. We know she's gone to that other space where she can't form thoughts into words. And we haven't had any of those in quite a while. But it's been great for me to know there's a physiological reason why that happens. And it's not just Sarah being evasive or Sarah trying to hide or Sarah whatever. It's just she can't actually form words. And that's just eye-opening to me. I had no idea that such things happen in the human brain. So
frame the weekend for me. So my time there as you guys were starting to take more and more risks, you were starting to move closer and closer to each other, have more vulnerable conversations, have deeper conversations. And I'm sitting there like, this is escalating in pace way beyond my expectations or what I had thought. So what I would love to hear from the two of you, what was going on as you were starting to take more risks, especially you, Sarah, as you were taking more risks and stepping towards Wayne and being willing to be present and stay in some of those conversations.
I felt your presence being there gave me a safety net to know that I could be able to say things, or I don't know if I would ask questions, but it just provided safety to where I felt like we could go into other things. And, you know, I honestly don't even now know why or what made me draw and stay here, because I was there for many hours. We're asking, mm-hmm. and I was talking, and I mean, I had to be God, because I wasn't planning anything, thinking about anything. It was just a minute by minute, but yet I was feeling safe, and I was kind of being described about, my life was kind of being described, and seeing how the traumatic brain, trying to infiltrate that into, not even knowing why, but, you know, understanding that probably something happened. I mean, I knew it was a tough childhood, but that's all I basically kind of knew. But then thing that you provided safety, and Wayne was not responding in the way that I was anticipating or expecting him to, or even had heard or prepared for him to go. I was fully expecting, especially with how I did it, that he's going to be angry. He was going to be vindictive. He was going to be mad. But he was exactly opposite. He was loving and patient, a softness and a gentleness. You know, I was trying to process all of that, and it just, you know, it was just, mine just was constantly on overload. And so I really think Father was just gently leading the way. I mean, I don't take any credit for any of the questions or even being open or talking. I can't say that I know why I did it.
Did Wayne tell you about the cue that he and I had between each other?
No, I don't think so. I know we had kind of developed a cue. I said, I think if I stop talking and I have nothing to say, that means I'm stumbling. I just knew that was happening.
So Wayne and I had actually talked before, and he's just like, hey, if you sense like it's an ouch, or I'm pressing into a space that Sarah's not connecting well with, like tap me on the leg or like tap my foot, and I'll redirect. And there was a couple times that I did that, and he actually redirected and honored that really well and adjusted quickly. And I don't know if you even noticed it or caught it as we were in the conversation or not.
No. There's one question that Wayne had asked, and I don't know if I want to say what it is, but he had asked and I answered it. And
I already talked about it.
Oh, you did?
Earlier, yeah.
And that one was just, wow, that one was a hard one. And I answered yes. And immediately, I mean, I knew he would break down, and I looked at you. And you just lip synced. You said, it's okay, or something like that. And I was just crushed. I was just crushed, you know, because I know what I felt, but I know what he had to be. I mean, that was just, yeah.
I'll learn someday not to ask questions you don't want to hear honest answers to. I was going to say, for me, when Sunday afternoon was really different than Saturday, because Saturday was very specific and trying to guard that, not make more of it than it was. When she came over here willingly, offered to, it was her volunteering, and just the nature of the conversation. It was late in the day before that difficult thing came up, but
yeah,
the rest of it was just helped me understand. And there, even I asked if I could have just some personal time without you there, because there's things in the letter that we still go back on and going, okay, what's real here that I need to work on, and what was painted by this therapist and became part of the trauma target. And one of those was just, it was kind of been a part of our relationship, and I thought it was something we both were embraced together, but it was really called out in this letter. It was something I just wanted to sit down and talk to her and just say, you know, you've held this space for me, and it's been really incredible. And now, was it really been offensive to you? Has it really been the problem? And she was, you know, I don't know how I think about that. And no, and she kind of hemmed and hawed with it a little bit. But And then I asked for 10 minutes and we ended up spending 30, 40 minutes together just talking. And it got some of the things that for me from her letter, if that had destroyed our marriage, I would have gone to my grave in horror, you know, because I really thought we were together on this. It turns out we were. Turns out we were. But again, when you're trying to find evidence against somebody, because, you know, her therapist was, he's got to be abusive. He's got to be. And so now we got to find something that makes him that way. That was very helpful for me to get past that with her. And because it made me feel like I had trusted her with this deep place in my heart. And now she's going to do something public with it, of whatever. And again, that was all advice she'd gotten. You know, threaten him, keep him at bay. He's going to be mean, nasty, vindictive. And I didn't have it in my heart. It wasn't even, I was pretending not to be. I never had it. I knew I wanted her back in my life, no matter what. No matter if it took 10 years, 5 years, I wanted her back in my life. And whatever it takes, I'm going to find a way. So she was here, you know, 5.5, 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And then you went home Monday morning. And then she was dropping off a dog here. And then she said, you want me to stay around afterwards? And so, yeah. So we end up on the patio talking. I think we had dinner together that night. And we just threw some stuff together around here. And we had another 3 or 4 hours that day. And then the next. And she kept coming over and staying over.
You're currently sitting in the same room. You're joking with one another. You're having fun with one another. You're smiling with one another.
I'm being attacked. Ow, she pinched me. I want this on the record. She pinched me hard.
No. Well, you are being, pinched me. You're being mildly attacked.
That's because he deserved it. He deserved it.
It's causing my own trauma at the moment.
How did we land back in a space where the three of us were able to dialogue and laugh and talk together about this journey? How did you guys get back together? What was the process of God moving you back towards one another in a relational way?
It's funny because when we first even started talking about getting back together, Sarah had a very specific process. We're going to go out on some dates. You're going to court me and we're going to have another ceremony. And I'm like, okay, I'd date her again. That's okay with me. But somehow we never got there. We went to a movie at one point. I said, there's a movie we both wanted to see. And I said, well, and we weren't back together yet, but we said, hey, let's go see a movie. And she said, okay. And then we sit there like teenagers. I don't know if I can hold her hand. I don't know if I can touch her leg. I don't know. It just was funny because the way we normally watch a movie together, it was like, so I asked her, does that count as a date? And she goes, I don't know. Because I was trying to get some dates in.
Okay.
So we get on to courtship. So we get on to a ceremony. So she come home.
Did you do the awkward stretch where you raised your arm over the top and then slowly dropped it over her shoulders or anything like that? Trying to those.
I thought about it. It was a long time ago. But the theater seats they have today don't make that very practical.
I know. Oh, they don't.
Even just trying to think about, should I put my hand in his hand? It's just all those little things.
It was weird. And then, but we never made a decision to get back together is ultimately what happened. I mean, after you were here, she kept coming over, bringing dogs or whatever, and then she would stay and we would hang out and talk. And then it'd be like, well, it's getting late. You want to go to dinner? And she'd say, yeah, let's go to dinner. So we go out to dinner. And I'm like, does this count as a date? And it was just that. It was just, we kept spending, I would have taken her back day one. Come back. Everything's good. Let's go. She just really needed that space to kind of, I think so, lean into a relationship. See if it was safe. See what was going on inside her.
Yeah. It was definitely awkward. It was just, I wasn't wanting it to be called a date because I didn't know. I just didn't know, you know.
And in the middle of this, we have our anniversary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. May 17th. We've been spending some good time together, and now our anniversary is here. I wake up alone in my house, and we were going to go out to dinner for our anniversary. I talked about that. We were going to exchange cards. But God knew what they were going to say. We were going to do that, but our grandson ended up with a playoff game for Little League on our anniversary night. So now we couldn't go out to dinner because it's a 5 o'clock game or whatever. So we had to instead, we were going to do it the next night. So I woke up on Tuesday, which was... I mean, I woke up in great, deep, dark despair. This is the first time I've not been with Sarah somewhere else for our anniversary and celebrating it. How was that morning for you?
It was awkward. It was different, but I was in my apartment and alone, and I was just, honestly, each day it's just a matter of focusing on memories and stuff, and I knew it would be hard and awkward, but I was at peace. What would be the word? I was somewhat settled in my where I was, but I wasn't agonizing over it.
I was tormented. My gosh, my baby's not. It's 47 years that we've made it. And I'm not even sure we've still made it 47 years in marriage because we're not together. Though it looked like it was going that way. My two doves were telling me still it's going to happen. I was supposed to have an appointment with the lady you'd introduced me to, had been helpful in kind of therapizing me and also helping me understand trauma. And I got a notice that morning that she had COVID and was canceling the appointment. And I was, oh gosh, I was like, of all days, God, I really could have used someone to talk to today. So I called some of the other folks I know instead. And we went to the game together. So we saw each other. We went to the ball game together. We sat there and we went out the next night down to a place on the beach that we enjoy and exchange cards. That was a good experience.
Yep.
I still don't know if it was counting as a date yet.
And it was getting closer. It was, I forget which trauma memory I was dealing with, but it was just talking through a lot of
There weren't a stuff. Lot of specific memories at this point.
No.
There weren't. She was just having shades of the first few. There was a kind of a thing about her getting increasingly comfortable in my love that I think also helped open the door to these memories returning, her body having a safe space to process these things, maybe.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it. Anyway, the next day, Thursday, was supposed to be, we were going to a production for our granddaughter. It was in a play or musical play. And we'd planned to go, but I had a golf tournament that day out of town. And that golf tournament ran way late. And Sarah had offered to have me over to her apartment one day. She was going to make Abel Skiver pancakes, which is a Danish thing, and I love them. And I hadn't had any since Sarah left. She didn't leave any of those for me. So,
and I had the mixer.
And she had the mixer.
I took the mixer.
Which is probably a good place for it. I probably wouldn't use it.
That was a safe spot for it, Sarah.
But the golf tournament runs late, and the guy I'm driving back with, he stops to do some stuff, run some errands, and it was like, I'm not going to make it back in time to get to this play. Okay. So I just text Sarah, say, I want you to go play without me. She said, why don't you just come over tonight? And this is just seeing how God orchestrates these things. She said, we can go to the play tomorrow night. It's a two-night deal. We can go tomorrow night. Why don't you just come over and do the dinner thing tonight? And I said, okay, that sounds great to me. And she said, bring some buttermilk, because she needed that. So I finally got to her place about 6 o'clock. I'd stopped, bought buttermilk, bought her flowers. I was real excited. This first time I'd been given an address to actually go to Sarah's apartment. So I go in and I have flowers and I'm expecting this wonderful moment. And Sarah's standing there so excited to see me in her apartment. She's smiling. She's grinning. And I just came unglued. That Sarah had made a place without me just overwhelmed me. I just started crying. And I looked at her and I said, I got to leave. And she said, no, don't leave. And I said, no, I'm not going to. I don't want you to see this. And she said, please stay. And so I'm trying to collect myself. And I mean, I am sobbing. This is not just, I've got some tears in my eyes. Yeah. I'm just sobbing. And I can't collect myself. I cannot breathe. This is as close as I've ever been to a panic attack. I don't think I've ever had one. And I don't think this one was one, but I couldn't get a deep breath. Yeah. I just couldn't. I was sobbing. And I kept saying, I need to go. I don't want you to see. And she, because what I was feeling was everything I felt when I first got home and read that letter from Sarah, I was at the kitchen counter again, and all this pain and loss of understanding, it's not fair. It didn't. And I just said, I just need to go in. So I went in the other room and just sat on the bed in the spare room in her place. And I just sobbed. And I was talking to God. I was talking to God out loud. I couldn't control what I was saying. Yeah. And a lot of the pain of what I went through was coming out. And I knew Sarah was hearing it. And I didn't want her to hear it. And I was trying to stop it. And about 20 minutes or so, she came into the room and just knelt in front of me and put her hands on my knees. And she just started speaking very reassuring words to me. You know, I love you and I'm sorry and we get through this. And it went on for maybe 2 hours. I could not stop crying. And she just held my pain in a very lovely way. And it was gracious of her. I found out later, well, I won't go ahead. So about 2 hours. Now it's too late to cook dinner, right? Yeah. I'm outside my intermittent fasting window, which I'm pretty legalistic about.
So. And he's hungry.
Yeah.
And I'm hungry. Crying takes a lot out of
you. It does take a lot of energy out of you.
Man, I don't ever recall sobbing that hard for that long, being in such agony. And Sarah seeing it. Sarah seeing the raw pain that in some ways she put me through, even though it wasn't her, but the trauma that caused her to do what she did.
Sarah, what was going on for you as you were holding as you were holding space for Wayne, as he was sitting there and you're watching this happening, knowing that in some regards the decisions that you had made had authored what you were observing?
I was responsible for that pain. Yeah. And I knew that. And I don't know if I was I told him I'm sorry. But yet I knew that at that time, that's my only option.
Yeah.
The other option was going to take my life. So, it was really hard for me, who is one who doesn't like to disappoint people, right?
Yeah.
To where knowing the trauma that I caused him, and I didn't want him to leave, and all I could do is just be there and just hold his hands and... It really wasn't a lot for me to say, so I just kind of was there and I just wanted him not to leave, partly because of just the immense pain, not because I was trying to control or hold him. I just wanted to be there and just love him through it.
Yeah.
Right. And it was a very tearing thing inside of me too, because I know this was from my actions.
Her touch, her words, her tears, they were all very healing.
Yeah.
It was amazing the way she just held space for my pain. Not a lot that she said verbally, but hugging, she put her head next to my head and just hold me. And yeah. And then finally all that subsided and we were hungry. So we're not going to hamburger. Must eat. And then came back to her place and we were kind of relaxed about it by then. I was in her place, but it was still hard for me to see that she had run so well and so hard and had nested. I mean, this is Sarah. This is decorated like Sarah decorates. This is, filled with stuff that just made my heart hurt. And then as we had to take the dogs out for a walk, and then she just, as we were there, she said, I'm feeling it in her gut. She's feeling that trauma response. And I said, what do you need from me? And I thought it would be, I want you to go. And she said, I need you to hold me. And so we went back to her place and laid on the floor with the dogs and she just wanted me to hold her. And I just held her for about an hour. And I got a chance to hold her pain for an hour.
That was the first indication. I remember that at that time was with Grandpa. There was I didn't know any connections or what was happening, but there was a sense that with him, I was feeling fear or trauma.
Yeah.
And none of the incidents had really come out as far as being in my mind yet, but that was early on.
And so as I held you that evening and we laid on the floor there, that all subsided, right? And you were fine. And then she said, do you want to stay over? And because we're not back together, it feels a little bit like we're shacking up. You know, just a little bit of like, are we allowed? We're married. So legalism runs deep in this old boy. But I had the presence of mind and I just said, you know what, this has been, I knew it was late.
Yeah.
I knew she... You know, we go to bed fairly early for the most part. And I didn't know where the invitation was coming from. And I just said, listen, we've had a very emotional evening. And I've got my therapy appointment that had been canceled on Tuesday had been moved to Friday. And I said, I got an appointment in the morning. I said, why don't I go home? Why don't we just let this, because again, I'm horse whispering, right? Yeah. I don't want this to be something she regrets yeah. later. Like I felt trapped and I invited him. So I want to make sure this is really coming from a free space. And she said, yeah, that's probably a good idea. So I went home. And then the next day, two things happened in my time with Therese that was really, really critical. One was I told her about the night. I went through the whole night mm-hmm. with her. And she said, so what were you feeling when you're standing right there? And I said, I felt like I was back at my counter having finished Sarah's letter. She said, no, I don't know what you're thinking. I want to know what you're feeling. Mm. And I said, I felt disgusting. Mm. He goes, disgusting. I said, yeah, her letter to me is I've left you because you're a really bad guy. It never says it that way, yeah. but just all she spells out about me. And I feel like that when she's in her place. Well, there's two things that went with that. First of all, she said, disgusting. Does Sarah use that word? And I said, no, Sarah's never used that word. Hmm. How does Sarah feel when you use that word? I said, Sarah doesn't like it. She asked me to find another word. And she said, yeah. She said, you know what I think? I think disgusting is a self-flagellating word. Hmm. And when she said that, man, the lights went on. I went, oh my gosh, it is exactly that. Yeah. I'm using that to flog me. And when I say it and it wounds Sarah a little bit, then I want her to know my pain.
Yeah.
I've been using that in a self-flogging way. And I respond immediately. I say, oh my gosh, I think you're right. Mm. And I've not used that term again. And she asked me, well, why do you think Sarah, because we're getting back together, we're having dinners together, but then she goes home.
Yeah.
And she said, why do you think she goes home? I said, because I think I'm disgusting. Mm. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, the same thing. I just, if I were safe for her, if I weren't disgusting in some way, she could stay with me and be at my home, our home. And she said, can you think of another reason Sarah would go to her apartment other than you're disgusting? And I remember going, I have no idea what else it would be. I have nothing.
Yeah.
She said, how about if trauma takes a lot of solitude to heal. Mm. And when she said that, it opened a door into, oh my gosh, Sarah's not going there to get away from me. Sarah's going there as part of her healing. And that flipped a switch. Both those two things that morning flipped a switch. I had not ever been upset or internally that she would go to her apartment for a time. Because you talked about it as being a place where you could, he had no responsibilities. He didn't have to get up at a certain time. Didn't have to, you know, there was nobody else to coordinate meals with. It was just a place where Sarah could be alone with God and her music, which a lot of music about God's heart to her. Yeah. That's how her and God communicated a lot through this whole thing.
Yeah.
So when she came over that Friday night to go to the play, I said, you're really going to love my therapist there. She goes, what? And I told her these things. And she goes, yes, I do like her. And so we went to the play that night. It went fairly late, went to almost 10. The time we got back here was after 10. And she said, you mind if I stay over? And I just said, are you really want to? And she said, yes, I do. And so that was the first night we stayed over. And we didn't make any decisions about that. She just stayed over, which I loved. And the next day, when we had to cancel our breakfast meal on Thursday, we had scheduled it for Saturday. So then I went out Saturday to her apartment. Walked in, totally different, didn't feel sad about it. Saw that as a place to celebrate with her, what it was meaning to her. I realized how much had flopped in my heart in a couple of days. Yeah. And then sharing that with some brothers on Monday, I realized there was no pain left in the moment I came home. I think about it. I remember it as an event. I remember the pain I was in. But I don't feel that pain anymore. Not since that night. Not since somehow that was cathartic in the agony that came out and the way Sarah held it. We talked a couple of few podcasts back now. I'm not sure when this is going to air about relational repair. And Sarah did a thing to me that is unconscionable. It's unthinkable, you know, to just disappear in the dead of night without a conversation. And yet Sarah has done the relational repair for that. Mm. It's not like it was her fault. There's a lot of things that went into that.
Yeah.
But having done it that way, by being able to talk and hold and pray and whatever, there's no animosity in my heart now for what happened. There's no pain in it for what happened. There's the memory of it. Gosh, I remember that.
Yeah.
And And some elements of that come up now and then, but the pain of that, of that night, and nor the pain of her going to her apartment when she feels like she wants to. But even that's changed in recent weeks now. Yeah. She hasn't been to her apartment alone in a long time.
And 2 weeks ago, I think it was.
2 weeks ago or something. Yeah. And she even said the other day, I don't want to go down there alone. We go down there sometimes for the weekend because we're trying to sell the house. They run open house here. So let's go stay at Sarah's place or our apartment.
Yeah.
So we'll go spend a weekend there like we're spending a weekend in a hotel or something. And so she likes that. And she likes being there because there's no responsibilities yeah. there, which is kind of fun. And there's a great place to walk the dogs near there that we both love. But she really doesn't like being alone now. And that's one thing Therese said. She said, the day will come when she'd rather be with you than be in solitude. And that's a good sign of the healing that's happening in her heart.
As Father rejoins our heart, Sarah's brain starts to let her in on some well-hidden secrets from her childhood. Next time on The God Journey.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.